I think I was about 20 years old. I was driving in a car along Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay. I was with a friend, and we were just, you know, the classic platonic friends, just friends situation. And she had this comment for me out of the blue, and she said, maybe we'd be married someday, and she'd be a lawyer, and I'd be a writer, and we would live in Half Moon Bay. How did I respond to that, you may ask? If I remember correctly, I said nothing. Just let it pass. She married someone else, of course, and I remained single for many years. But for some reason, her comment came back to me a few times through the years. And I don't know how this happened exactly, but I began thinking and hoping and dreaming that someday I would end up in Half Moon Bay for a week or two, and I would hole up in some weather-beaten shack in the middle of winter, and I would be writing. She said, I'd be a writer, she'd be a lawyer, so I was going to be a writer. She actually went on to be a lawyer, by the way. And so I was going to hole up in this shack. It was going to be the middle of winter. The cypress trees would be bending in the wind. There'd be a raging storm outside. The rain and the wind would be battering this weather-beaten shack, and I would be inside resting poetic prose from my battered soul. My battered soul would match the weather on the outside. And so you may think this is a little more of a nightmare than a dream. but I guess for me it was a little bit romantic. It was the classic picture of your tortured artist, right? Something beautiful was going to come out of this. And it was my little dream. It was my little hope. And it wasn't something that I thought about very much or really actively dreamed about or actually thought about doing anything about. But it came back to me every once in a while. But that hope, that little dream went unfulfilled. What comes of our hopes? We're going to meet a man today who has had hopes in his life, but those hopes have become something along the lines of an empty dream. He's been paralyzed for 38 years, and he's pretty much given up hope. Then Jesus shows up. Jesus shows up in our lives as well. We have hopes. We have dreams. What happens when Jesus shows up in our hopes? That's how we're beginning our text this morning. That's the thought we want to have in our mind as we enter into the story, as we try to relate to this man that we are going to meet. John chapter 5, we're going to look at this in several parts. First of all, we're going to look at verses 1 through 6. John chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool, in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there, and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed? Do you want to be healed?" So Jesus goes to where there are sick people. There's a multitude of sick people, invalids, blind, the lame, what have you. And Jesus intentionally goes to this place. Later in our service, we're going to hear from Jocelyn White from the International Justice Mission. And one of the things that I and so many of us appreciate about the International Justice Mission is that they go to where people are afflicted. And they want to do something about it. And we're going to hear later in the service from Jocelyn, and there's going to be an opportunity for lunch to hear from her as well. So what John is referring to here to is the popular belief at this time and place that when this particular pool was stirred up, that there was a possibility for healing. We're going to see that a little bit later in the passage, but you may notice that there is no verse 4. There was no verse 4 originally when John wrote this manuscript, apparently. Later, there was a scribal addition that worked its way into some manuscripts that seemed to explain, that tried to explain what was really going on here. And so, according to this addition, the popular belief was that an angel of the Lord would come and stir up the waters at random times, and if the sick person happened to be there in the water when the water was stirred up, there was the possibility that the magic of the waters would do their work and that particular person would be healed. So Jesus asks this man a very interesting question. Do you want to be healed? The answer, of course, is yes. Of course the man wants to be healed. It's an obvious question. It's an obvious answer. He's been sick and he's been paralyzed. He's been an invalid for 38 years. Yes, of course he wants to get well. He wants to be healed. However, what we are starting to get used to in the Gospel of John, and we're going to have to continue to get used to it, is that when Jesus speaks of many things, he speaks with a double meaning. And he's often going after that deeper meaning, that deeper, in this case, the deeper kind of healing than simply a physical healing. We might remember Jesus' interaction with Nicodemus, and he spoke of being born again. Jesus was not speaking of a literal second birth. We might also remember in John chapter 4 that Jesus encountered this woman by the well, and he spoke to her, he offered her living water. He was not offering her living water, he was offering her spiritual water. He was offering her something deeper, something for her heart, something for her soul. So when Jesus asks the question to this man, "Do you want to be healed?" the question really concerns the deeper healing. Do you want to be healed, sir, through and through, all the way down to your bones? I mean in your heart. Do you really want to be healed? Of course the man wants to be healed physically, but the question really is, do you want to be healed spiritually? Do you want to be healed in your heart? After all, which is the bigger problem, the broken body or the broken heart? Likewise, Jesus probes the deeper regions of our hearts. He wants to go to those deeper places, those places where we're wounded, those places where we're sick in our hearts, those places where we really don't know how to function and how to think and how to make our way in the world. For after all, Jeremiah the prophet says in Jeremiah 17, verse 9, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it?" That's the human problem, a sick, deceitful heart. The greater problem perhaps is that we don't even know that's the case. Most people don't really realize that there's a problem. It's easier, for example, to identify a sick body than a sick heart. It is easier, perhaps, to trust an MD with a scalpel than a spiritual surgeon who really wants to cut away at your heart, who wants to go into those tender and weak and vulnerable and sick and even deceitful places and cut away at your heart. I once asked a man many years ago, and I probably didn't do this very well because we had a very difficult relationship, but I was questioning what was going on in his heart, and I was surprised by how angry he was in response. And he told me in no uncertain terms what I could do if I wanted to talk about his heart, and I can't tell you what he said here in church. He was an angry man. Once I started going to that place in his heart, he wanted nothing to do with it. So the question comes to us. Do you want to be healed? Really healed? Do you want to be healed deep in your heart? Do you recognize that there's a sickness there? There's a disease there? There's something in you that needs to be healed in a very deep way. And are you willing to let Jesus go to that place? He's asking the question to all of us today. Do you want to be healed? Not necessarily an easy question to answer. Most of us, if we're sick, would want to get healed. But do we recognize that there's a sickness in our hearts that also needs to be healed? How does the man answer the question? Verse 7. "The sick man answered him, 'Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me.'" Jesus is a visitor from Galilee in the north. He has come to Jerusalem in the south, and here we have a man from Jerusalem who's been going to this pool for a lot of years. He's been an invalid for 38 years, and he explains, for the sake of this visitor, this stranger from out of town, how things work around these parts. "If you really want to get healed, sir, what you need to understand that there's this pool here, and when the water is stirred up, a particular person who wants to be healed has to get into that water at that particular time, and then perhaps the magic waters are going to do their work. That's how things work around here, sir. Of course I want to be healed, but I can't get healed because I've got a bunch of problems. I lack the agility to get down into the pool." Now, what's more infuriating than that? He has this problem he wants to be healed from, but because he has this problem, he can't be healed. He can't get down into the pool. He can't get down into the pool fast enough when the water does get stirred up. So he says, it's hopeless, essentially. That's what has happened to this man. His hopes have become an empty dream. It's all about, for him, what he can't do and what he doesn't have. He can't get down into the pool, number one. And because he can't get down into the pool in time, what he needs is a strong man. Literally, it says he needs a man. He doesn't have a man who is going to carry him down into the pool at the right time when the water gets stirred up. He doesn't have that man. He doesn't have that person who's going to wait by his side who can carry him down into the pool. It's all about what he can't do and what he doesn't have. For many of us, our story also is about what we don't have. Many of us feel as if we don't have the intellect that is necessary to make our way in life. We don't have the looks. We don't have the charisma. We don't have the personality that is necessary to make our way in life. We don't have the man. We don't have the woman, whoever that might be. We don't have the connections that are able to get us to open the doors that we need have opened in our lives. For us, many of us, our story is about, our narrative is about what we can't do and what we don't have. And often we don't really think about this overtly, but these are subtle sorts of narratives that work their way into our minds and our hearts, and so this is how we think about ourselves. It's all about what we can't do and what we don't have. It always seems as if someone else steps down into the pool before us, or has someone else to carry them down into the pool. It seems as if in this competitive world, we can't compete. We just don't have what it takes to really compete. We have this hyper-competitive valley. High achievers all over the place. And it seems for many of us as if we just don't have what it takes to compete, to be successful, to get by. Our hopes then, for many of us, become empty dreams. What'll come of our hopes? What comes of the man's hopes? Verse 8. Jesus said to him, "Get up, take up your bed, and walk." And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Notice, Jesus does not fulfill his hopes. What did he hope for? The best he could hope for is that he would have a man who would stand by with him and carry him down into the pool. Jesus does not fulfill those hopes. He transcends them. Literally, he blows the man's hopes out of the water. Has nothing to do with the water. Has nothing to do with the pool. All he's thinking about is this pool. I've been here for 38 years, perhaps. We don't know. He's been in that condition for a long time. Whether he's been hanging out in that pool all these years, we don't know. But he knows all about the pool. All he can think about is the pool and getting down into the pool at the right time. Turns out he doesn't need a strong man. Why? Because he has a stronger man. He has Jesus. Therefore, it doesn't matter what you can't do and what you don't have. It does not matter that you can't compete. It does not matter that someone always seems to step into the pool before you. None of that matters if you have Jesus, that is. If you have the stronger man. You don't need the man you think you need. You need the stronger man. You need Jesus who blows your hopes out of the water. Have your hopes become empty dreams? Jesus does not fulfill your hopes. He transcends them. He does something that you couldn't even begin to think about. He transcends your hopes. Jesus transcends your hopes. He does not carry you down into the pool, so to speak. He commands you to rise up and to walk and even to mount up with wings like eagles. Think outside the pool. Many of us are stuck in the pool. Well, we're not even in the pool. We're thinking, how do I get down there? How do I get down to the pool? Everybody's beat me down to the pool. Jesus wants to do something so much greater than take you down into the pool. He wants you to soar spiritually with him, to have your heart be healed, and to fly with him. Well, for me, think outside of Half Moon Bay. So it was, 35, 37 years ago or so, I was driving along Highway 1, thinking about Half Moon Bay. This little dream morphed, came about, thinking about going to Half Moon Bay one day, never went to Half Moon Bay. Then a few years ago, some friends bought a condominium in Capitola. And when they did, they offered to let me use it for whatever I wanted to use it for. And when they did, I remembered that old dream that I had forgotten about years ago. I remembered that what I wanted to do was to go to the Half Moon Bay, I wanted to go to the coast, and I wanted to write overlooking the ocean, and the storm would be happening inside my weather-beaten shack. And so they offered me this condominium in Capitola. It wasn't Half Moon Bay, but it was still along the coast, so I thought, oh, okay, this is really great. The Lord's really, really good. I wasn't even thinking about this. This is an unprayed prayer. This is an unfulfilled dream, and the Lord wants me to go to Capitola and write. And so what did I do? I scheduled to go to Capitola along the coast in the middle of winter, and I expected, okay, there's going to be a good storm outside, you know, and it's going to batter the condominium, and my soul is going to be battered. Except, you know what? My soul was pretty much at rest. I met this wonderful woman. I had these two beautiful kids, and I wasn't the tortured artist that I thought I would be, you know, when this whole thing came about. And guess what? So I'm in Capitola, Santa Cruz County, middle of winter. I cannot see a cloud. There's not one cloud anywhere. There's not even any fog. And there was always fog in Capitola. It's this beautiful 70-degree day after day after day. And I wrote in this beautiful, sun-drenched condominium in Capitola, not a weather-beaten, run-down shack in Half Moon Bay. And by the way, you can't find a run-down, beaten, weather-beaten shack in Half Moon Bay anymore anyway. Back then, you could. That's not what they do with the land over there anymore. So it took about 30 years for my dream to grow up, but when it did, it became something different. It became something better. It became something I couldn't have imagined. Jesus transcended my hopes. Now, Jesus isn't finished with the man, neither is he finished with us. Verse 9. Now that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed." But he answered them, "The man who healed me, that man said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" They asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk?'" Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn as there was a crowd in the place. Jesus here gets himself in trouble for healing on the Sabbath, and this leads us into the divine son discourse, which we're going to take up next week. So this is a thread. There's a seed that is planted in the narrative that is picked up in our passage next week. So we're going to save that for next week. I want to return to the man here because he is the focus of the story here, in addition to Jesus, of course. Verse 14. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. Jesus tells the man that he is well. He's been healed. Is that true? In one sense, yes, certainly. He is well enough to walk. But there will come a day when he will not be able to walk. There will come a day when he will take his last step. There will come a day when he will speak his last word. There will come a day when he will take his last breath. What happens on that day? Jesus tells us later in John chapter 5 that there is going to be a resurrection of all people. Some are going to go to a resurrection of life, and some are going to go to a resurrection of judgment. And so at the end of the days, what do you want? Of course you want a resurrection of life. And so Jesus is really after something deeper and more profound than simply healing the man. He says, "Sin no more, so that nothing worse will happen to you." Now, what could possibly be worse than 38 years of paralysis. Facing God at the end of your days, having lived an entire life irrespective of the will of God. That's worse. So that's what Jesus is after. Jesus is after the healing of the heart. So he healed his body in order to heal his heart. He just doesn't say, you are well. He says, see, you are well. You have to see something here. You have to perceive something. You have to perceive that I have made you well so that you will sin no more, so that you will leave this life that you have been living and follow me and believe in me. And believing in me, then embrace holiness and resist evil. That's what you have to do. Jesus is saying to the man, see, perceive, that you may sin no more. So what has Jesus done for you? How has he transcended your hopes? Many people have the experience of having their lives opened up somehow by some blessing, even if they don't acknowledge God in it. Something profound happens, their eyes are open, they have some blessing that comes out of the blue. And some revel in that blessing for a while, and then perhaps even opening their hearts to God, and then forget all about that blessing, and then return to their former way of life. I had a friend from years ago when I was an editor, and he got involved in this awful car accident, and he was almost killed. He miraculously survived, and I went to visit him in the hospital, and I expected to see this, you know, depressed and crumpled and broken man. And I was surprised to find him so cheerful. I was surprised to see his heart so tender. This had been a pretty cynical man, and yet he was just thankful to be alive. He was appreciative of all of the nurses who were helping him. And I had this wonderful hour with him in the hospital. And I was just so delighted to experience him in this way because I hadn't experienced him this way before. He was discharged from the hospital. He went home. I went to visit him in his home. And his heart had closed tight. There was no way to get it open again. I had this long conversation with him. At many points, I tried to sort of get my way back into his heart, to open his heart up to God again, but the heart had closed shut. He would have nothing to do with any kind of conversation about spiritual matters, with any kind of conversation about what God had done in that whole experience. He returned to his former ways. Jesus blesses us, and then what does he do? He comes looking for us. He blessed the man, and then he melted away into the crowd, apparently because he needed a future conversation that needed a more private moment. There was this crowd around. Jesus melts away into the crowd, but then he goes looking for the man, and he finds the man. Jesus blessed him, went looking for him. Jesus blesses us, and then he comes looking for us. What does he want to do when he comes looking for us? He wants to heal our hearts. He wants us to take notice of what he has done for us in order that he might heal our hearts. What is Jesus actually doing when he blesses us? He is, in fact, showing us his heart. That's what he's doing. He's not simply doing something nice for you so that you can have a good time in life or you can make your way more easily in life. He is showing you his heart in order that he might heal your heart. That's how he heals our hearts, by showing us his heart. How much he loves us. How much he cares for us. Jesus transcends our hopes in order to heal our hearts. See, so that you may sin no more. See, you are well. See what Jesus has done for you, so that you might believe in him. So that if you believe in him, you might believe in him more. And believing in him, you might embrace goodness and holiness and resist evil and serve his purposes in this world. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18, that we are being transformed as we behold the glory of God. Think about that. What's the key to transformation there? It's beholding the glory of God. It's seeing something. It's seeing the glory of God. How do you see the glory of God? Paul answers that question later, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. You see the glory of God in the face of Christ. So you're looking at the face of Christ, not obviously literally, but you understand who Christ is, looking at him in the scriptures and in your life, and you look at the face of Christ, and what are you seeing? You're seeing his heart. You're seeing the heart of Christ. You're seeing his greatness. You are seeing his love. And as you see that, Paul says, you are being transformed by the Holy Spirit. That's what the Holy Spirit is doing. He is transforming you as you behold the glory of Christ. Therefore, perception is transformation. And isn't that what faith is? It's seeing beyond the surface of things into the reality of things, into things as they really are, who God really is, and what God really is doing for us. So, we need then to be perceptive. We need to be spiritually aware. We need to be on the lookout. We need to have our spiritual eyes peeled for what Jesus is doing and how he is blessing us. Most of the time, I fear that all of this escapes us. We keep going on with life as usual, and we don't really have our spiritual antenna up so that we can actually see what Jesus is doing and how he is blessing us. Now, I recognize this is a challenge for most of us, and it's a special challenge for those of you who have been especially afflicted in life and feel as if your hopes have not been transcended, but your hopes have not been fulfilled, and you've been devastated, and it's difficult, and it's hard, and it almost seems impossible. Nevertheless, this is the life we are called to, the life of faith, which looks beyond the surface of things into the reality of things. Frederick Buechner helps us with this. Listen to him. Some moment happens in your life that makes it worth having been born just to have happen. Laughing with somebody till tears run down your cheeks. Waking up to the first snow. Being in bed with somebody you love. Whether you thank God for such a moment or thank your lucky stars, it is a moment that is trying to open up your whole life. If you turn your back on such a moment and hurry along to business as usual, it may lose you the ball game. If you throw your arms around such a moment and hug it like crazy, it may save your soul. Jesus, when he blesses us, when he transcends our hopes, is trying to open up our whole lives so that we can see him. What happened with the man? Looks like he turned his back on the moment. The moment happened. And he turned his back on the moment. Our text tells us that he turned away and went to the opponents of Jesus to rat him out. He went away, by the way, under the new strength that Jesus had given him to rat him out. He turned his back on the moment. By transcending our hopes, Jesus is trying to open up our whole lives. So, do you want to be healed, really healed, deep in your heart? Do you want to let Jesus go there and bring about the healing that he really wants to bring about? What was the Lord doing when he gave me, through my friends, that condo in Capitola? He was showing me his heart. He was opening up my whole life. And he was blessing me in a subtle, artistic way that he knew would delight my heart. And at least for one moment in my life, I was attentive. I recognized that. I recognized the old dream. I recognized the dream had been transformed, and I recognized the Lord's presence. And so I wrote my heart out in that condo in Capitola, but I also worshiped as I wrote. And I walked around the beaches, and I walked up to the cliffs, and I raised my hands to the Lord, and I worshiped. I spent a week worshiping the Lord, recognizing what he had done, because he opened up my whole life. And it's easier to see that when you recognize you had a dream from 30 years ago, and it got morphed, and it got transformed, and changed into something so much different. I was able to see it for one moment, and I think the Lord helped me see it. He opened up my eyes. What was he doing? He was showing me his heart, in order to heal my heart, in order that I might go deeper in faith, in order that finally and ultimately I might sin no more, that I might embrace holiness and resist evil and serve Jesus' purposes in this world. So one of the ways that I throw my arms around the moments as I try to write about them. When I recognize that, when I see that, and I don't see it often enough, when the Lord is doing something, when the Lord blesses me, when the Lord transforms a dream, something along those lines, I try to write about it. And that helps me experience it. That helps me experience the Lord. It helps me experience what He is doing. It helps me open up my whole life to the Lord and to wrap my arms around the moment. How will you throw your arms around the moment? What works for you? You have to be attentive. You have to watch for what the Lord is doing. And when it happens, sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's obvious, like the healing of a broken body. Much more often, it's subtle. It's artistic. It's beautiful. And you have to be attentive. And when it happens, you have to throw your arms around the moment. Jesus has transcended your hopes. I will grant you, it's hard to see that. But Jesus has transcended your hopes. Can you see? Can you look beyond the surface of things into the reality? Can you see? See, you are well. Sin no more.